tell me your full name.
My name is John Peter Maguire.
Okay. And where do you live now?
I live in Bull Creek.
Right. And what, do you mind telling us your address?
Yes. It's number 5, West Court, yep, in Bull Creek.
Where were you actually born?
I was born in Northern.
Yeah.
In 1954.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
And did you live in Northern for most of your life?
Grew up in Northern, York and Calaveran mainly.
Oh, okay.
So, we moved around a little.
Yeah. What, can you tell us a little bit about your parents?
Yes. My father was born in Brookton, or near Brookton.
Yeah.
And my mother was born in Northern.
Yeah.
They met and were married in Brookton,
mm-hmm,
and then we lived in York, Northern and Calaveran, but I come from a big family. There's 11 in my family.
How many children are there in your family?
11.
11 children, wow.
Yes. So, but my dad worked as a labourer, and
yep,
obviously with following jobs around and
yep,
looking for employment, that led to us moving around a little. Not as much as some people, but we moved to a couple of the country towns in my growing up years.
So were some aspects of his work like seasonal work? You know,
yes.
The various seasons of the year, fruit picking, all that sort of,
yep,
thing.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And so you went to school as part of that, obviously. That would have shifted around a little bit because of those moves. But
yes. My education was mainly in Northern,
mm-hmm,
and Calaveran primary schools.
Oh, okay.
And then for a short time at Northern Senior High School.
Mm-hmm.
And during my primary school years, I won a scholarship in that.
Oh, great.
That paid for my education, which was made things a lot easier for Mum and Dad.
Fantastic.
And that enabled me to finish my education at Guildford Grammar School.
Oh, you went to Guildford?
Yes.
What year did you finish in Guildford?
Finished year 12,
1972. Oh, okay, great. And were there many Aboriginal people at Guildford at the same time?
Well, there weren't a lot, but there were a few, and that certainly made things easier for me,
mm-hmm,
as a non-Aboriginal kid coming to a boarding school,
mm-hmm,
and in quite a different environment that I was used to,
mm-hmm,
and then leaving home, of course. I've never done that before,
mm-hmm,
but there were 5 other Aboriginal lads at the school, and that made it quite a bit easier. And some well-known ones, Rex Garves and Larry Kickett, were two of the lads that were there.
Great.
Yes.
So you have quite fond memories of going to Guildford?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was probably, I'd say it was one of some of the best years of my life.
Mm.
From an educational point of view,
mm,
and also from a sporting point of view.
Mm.
And it certainly gave me a lot of opportunities and gave me a launching pad for,
mm,
some of the things that I was able to do,
mm,
later on in life.
So what did you do after you left Guildford?
Did
you do more study?
No, I wanted to be a teacher, but after year 12 I thought, no, I've had enough of that.
Mm.
But I started work with the public service,
mm-hmm,
as a public servant in the Metropolitan Water Board, as it was called then, and left there shortly after to work with the West Australian Department of Tourism,
mm-hmm,
and I was there for about 9 or 10 years.
Oh, okay.
And that was very enjoyable, actually, because,
mm-hmm,
it gave me an opportunity to travel a little, mm-hmm, around Australia,
mm-hmm,
work in some of the other states, because we had,
mm-hmm,
offices in other states,
mm-hmm,
but certainly to be involved in working with people who were travelling and to advise them on destinations,
mm-hmm,
throughout the state.
Oh, okay.
Certainly was very interesting.
Mm, fantastic.
Mm.
So are you working now?
Yes, I got up until last year I've been public servant, so,
mm,
for 73 through to 98, and worked in various government departments.
Mm-hmm.
I spent some time with the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs,
mm-hmm,
Dr. Kim Holmes,
mm-hmm,
his office as his advisor.
Mm-hmm.
And
your job there was to advise on Aboriginal issues, was
absolutely
it?
Absolutely, yes.
Right.
Yeah. And that was very, very interesting. And, in fact, minister. But I left the public service to pursue a career as a consultant. And that's what I do at the moment. I'm a consultant to the Uniting Church. I do some work with Western Mining. And a group called BSD, a big consultancy group in West Perth. So that's where I'm headed at the moment.
So your role as a consultant, you're consulting primarily still in the area of advising on Aboriginal issues?
Yes, Aboriginal issues, information for some of these consulting groups on housing and environmental issues that impact on Aboriginal communities. It's fairly diverse. And but very interesting.
Absolutely.
And so it certainly keeps you busy.
So you use your understanding of I'll rephrase it. You use your Aboriginal perspective to advise in the area of housing, per se. The understanding is the extended family structure usually means that traditional housing sizes and layouts are not ideal. Is that right? That sort of
yes. Working on those specific issues. And also looking at the sport and recreational facilities for remote communities.
Yeah.
One of the big things that we've been working on is water storage and diversion, particularly for remote areas. And it's incredible because generally a lot of those areas have huge rainfalls during their wet months. And the rain comes down, the water runs off, and they don't have any water there. So we're particularly focusing on that area at the moment.
That's great. So what would have been your most interesting project to date in that later capacity as a consultant?
Well, it's just happening now. So we haven't actually pulled off a big contract yet. But we're working on it, and hopefully that will happen soon for us. But again, it's working and advising these people. They've got the expertise in engineering and survey areas along those lines.
Right, well, I was going to ask you about your general interests, I suppose, when you're not working. So could you tell us a bit about what you like to do when you have got spare time?
Well, there's not a lot of spare time.
No.
But sport has played a big part in my life. And when I left school, I played league football for East Perth.
Oh, did you? Yeah. Oh, great.
And then went over to Perth. But one of the highlights with playing footy at East Perth was playing in the 1978 Grand Final.
Oh, really?
But we won by 2 points.
Oh, fantastic.
Against Perth.
You're a legend.
I don't know about that. And cricket. I've played a lot of cricket over the years with Mount Lawley, and 21 years with Mount Lawley. A couple of seasons with Wilton.
Oh, good. Yeah.
But I suppose the highlight there, apart from being picked in the state squads a couple of times, I didn't get to play state cricket, which was a real disappointment. But compensation, I suppose, for not playing Shield cricket was being elected as captain of the Aboriginal cricket team that toured England in 1988.
It was
a fantastic experience.
Yeah.
And then basically what we did was retrace the steps of the first Australian cricket team, which was an Aboriginal team.
Was it really?
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
And they were a group of men who lived and played cricket in Western Victoria, Eden, Hope and Harrow. And in 1868, a chap got them together, and a non-Aboriginal guy got them together and said, let's do a tour of England. And so they I went to England in 1868 and did very well.
Mm.
They weren't treated as well as we were in 1988. And they, in fact, it was the first Australian cricket team.
Wow.
It was an Aboriginal team. So not a lot of people know that.
No, you don't hear that, do you?
No. So that was certainly a highlight. But what I do now is my children, and I have two.
How old are your children?
Stephen's 9
mm-hmm.
this year, and Jade will be 7 this year.
Oh, great.
And so my wife and I are keen sports people,
mm-hmm.
but of course our playing days are nearly over.
Yes.
And so it's focusing on our children and their involvement in sport and their education, of course. One of the things that I didn't mention was that my brother and I have written up a sports education program that we aimed at increasing the retention rates of Aboriginal kids in schools, and we're hopeful that
through sport,
yeah. using sport as the vehicle, but with the focus on education, because without education, it doesn't matter whether you're Aboriginal or Chinese or Vietnamese or Indian or Australian.
Mm.
Non-Aboriginal education is the key, and so we want to increase the retention rate of our Aboriginal kids throughout the state, so that they will obviously have a better education to be able to pursue careers and compete with the wider community when they leave school. So that's what the program is all about. But for the moment, we're focusing on our children and their involvement, obviously, in education, and their involvement in their own sports. And so it's that keeps us busy. Stephen plays T-ball, and he was selected in the district T-ball team, the under-9s, that competed in the state championships just recently. And our daughter was involved in gymnastics, and she will play T-ball next year, I think. But so those things keep us busy.
That's good. Yeah. So, do you have any other hobbies though that you sort of?
It's mainly focused on sport. I think I love playing golf. I don't get to play as often as I'd like to. I think just spending time with family in free time. I mean, we head off in the facilities in the Melville, city of Melville, fantastic. We can head down to Point Walter and we can... or just use the facilities within our city, Leeming and the Lyttelton Sportsman's. Sportsman's facilities there, the basketball and so on. So, and then there's plenty of parks and gardens that we can fly a kite or play cricket and have a hit, and it's just fantastic.
Mm. So you live in, have you lived in Bull Creek for a long time?
For 10 years now.
Mm.
So it's been a few.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, I was a north of the river person.
I
am
too,
And
where did you live north of the river?
Lived in Dianella in Bayswater.
Yeah, I live in Maylands, just next door.
Yes. And when I first left school, I lived in Dianella, and I thought south of the river was just a fine place.
Yes.
It's really quite weird. And people still have that perception.
They do, don't they?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Wow, you're living south of the river? You can't do that. You're a north of the river person.
I know. Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I did though, because I didn't get down this way that often.
Yeah.
I would get lost. It was just incredible.
Yeah, I can relate
like
to that.
Living in another place.
Yep.
But now that we're here, it's in Melville and the city of Melville and south of the river. We've really found it a wonderful environment, and I'm not just saying that. It really is. It's a great area to live, and I enjoy the facilities and. It really isn't that far from most things. I mean, you've got the hills just away to the east, and the beach isn't that far away. The facilities within the city are fantastic for sport and for recreational activities. And the city itself isn't far away across the freeway. So it really has a wonderful environment, and you've got shopping centres within close proximity to where we live. And so there's a wonderful variety of things that one can do within the city of Melbourne.
That's great. So what do you think are some of the... Are there any issues that relate to what you've observed in terms of the Aboriginal community, in terms of the local area that you would like to talk about?
Yes, look, I would like to see a lot more encouragement through the city to Aboriginal people to be involved in more of the community-based either facilities or involvement in community activities. And they, in fact, the City of Melbourne do a wonderful job really, but there are so many other cultures within the city. You can't have something going all the time, I suppose. But at least they're addressing the cultural diversity, and that's fantastic, because I have been sitting on the multicultural committee within the city. I haven't been to a few meetings, that many meetings of recent times, but obviously with that, with the setting up of that committee, there's a very, very positive approach and a very positive way to address the diversity of the cultures within the city, and that's fantastic. But certainly I would like to see a bit more focus on Aboriginal people and what we can do to educate and make people aware of our culture and of our tenure of the areas within the city of Melbourne.
And on a broader perhaps state sort of level, are there particular issues that you have strong opinions about in relation to Aboriginal people?
I do a bit of work in education, obviously, and I just think there needs to be, across the board, there needs to be more education of the Aboriginal culture and what Aboriginal people can contribute to the community. There needs to be Aboriginal studies compulsory within the school's curriculum. And there are some pilot programs being run and things like that, but there needs to be a decision made by the education department to say, right, this is what will be part of the curriculum from year K to 12. And with that, there will be that awareness and that education, because right at the moment, because it's not compulsory, people tend not to think about the Aboriginal history of Australia, and particularly of Western Australia. And if we can just make a more conscious effort to improve that status, then it will break down enormous barriers. There's still barriers there. There's still racism there. And through education, we can break down those barriers, and we can make sure that people become more aware. And it's an awareness thing that is so important. And it doesn't matter whether it's Aboriginal people or whether it's Italian people or other cultures. It's awareness to know how they think, how they live, what is important to them from a cultural viewpoint. And if we are aware of that, then we can be more tolerant. And I think that's really what it's all about. And so that's something that I would certainly like to see more of. I mean, we see the exposure through sport, unfortunately, there's some views that Aboriginal people can only play sport, and that's not the case. I mean, we have wonderful role models in sport, obviously, but we have very well-educated people in professional positions, and so we need to highlight and use those people as role models and as high-profile people to promote Aboriginal peoples being able to do other things than just play sport.
Absolutely. Well, I've sort of run through all of the questions that I had. Is there anything else that you would like to add that perhaps I haven't thought of asking you?
I think one of the, as a child growing up, one of the things that I particularly wanted to do was do well in the classroom. Because there was this burning desire to be as good as the other kids in the classroom. On the sports field, I had some skills, I had some ability as a footballer and a cricketer. And so those things were going to happen.
So you had a competitive...
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so. Well,
that often drives successful people, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes.
Competitive.
And unbeknown to me, as a young person growing up coming through primary school, I'd set some very realistic goals for myself, things that I wanted to achieve. I wanted to be the best kid in the class from an educational point of view. I wanted to be the best kid in mathematics. I wanted to be the best kid, best speller in the class. I wanted to be the boy with the best marks at the end of the school year. And I achieved some of those things. It was fantastic.
Right.
But I also had, and I think the bottom line to all of those things is that I had a wonderful family, I had fantastic parents, and they gave me tremendous support. My mother and father didn't go to school at all, and so they realised how important education was.
That's great.
And they made the effort to support us and say, what did you do in the classroom today? What did you learn today?
Yeah.
And so they, because of that interest, it made me want to do well for them.
That's
and
good.
Realising the opportunity that they didn't have,
yeah.
that I was having, I thought, well, this is, I need to do well in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Sport-wise, Sid Jackson was a fantastic footballer for East Perth, well before your time. but I was a Swan District supporter.
Yeah.
Sid was doing fantastic things for East Perth, and we used to come down to Perth on the odd occasion to watch a football match, or we'd see the replay on TV, and Sid was doing these fantastic things, and I thought, well, I barrack for Swans, but I barrack for Sid Jackson because he was a black fella, and I thought, if he can do it, I'm going to do that too. And at the end of Year 12, I did that. I played league football in my first year out of school. So, again, it was just some little goals that I'd set for myself that I wanted to achieve. And there was always a burning desire to achieve and do well, whether it was in the classroom, whether it was on the sports field, or whether it's been in business and work. And so those things are very important to me. And, I mean, again, my father said... gave me some wonderful advice years ago when I was a kid growing up. He said, no one owes you anything. Get off your backside and make it happen for yourself.
Fantastic advice, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
One of the things that I've observed, and I'll tell you the background to it, the City of Melville Library and Information Service, through GAIL, actually had a cross-cultural awareness session for library staff across the board in relation to Aboriginal history, Aboriginal heritage, because of some experiences in one particular library in the city where there had been some conflict within the Aboriginal community. And in an attempt to make the staff who are working at this particular branch and across the whole service understand what some of the background might be to those circumstances, they held this session. It was really informative and run by a cross-section of Aboriginal people. And I spoke to one lady who was about my age, and she made it very clear to me that the effects of earlier legislation, you know, such as the Flora
1905 Act.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
That was abolished in 67.
Yeah.
she made me understand that that certainly in her generation as a woman under 30, and definitely in her parents' generation, that the effects of that sort of law was still being felt in that it had caused so much disruption within Aboriginal families. I was interested in looking at that in terms of your own family. Obviously, it doesn't sound as if your core family has much experience with that, but perhaps there's other. Do you have anything to say about that in terms of your own experiences?
Let me tell you a very interesting story about my family and the reason why they weren't part of the stolen generation,
right.
My mother particularly. Yep. My grandfather was living in, and grandmother and my mother and their family were living in Northern at the time, and they'd heard that children were being taken from their families through from some of the towns to the south of Northern, Brookton, Pingelly, Beverley, York, and this was happening. And my grandfather said, "Look, no one's going to take my children from me." Mm-hmm. And in the middle of the night, as this the trucks and the people were coming down through those towns, in the middle of the night, they packed all their belongings onto the horse and cart and drove off into the bush.
Oh, okay.
And while they lived in the bush, my grandfather fenced and cleared land and for some of the farmers in the district. And while they lived in the bush, my grandmother, who was taught to read and write by some of the earlier settlers in York, she worked for them as a domestic, as they called them then, and then they were good enough to teach her to read and write. She taught my mum and some of the older brothers and sisters to read and write in the bush.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only form of education that my mother had.
Mm-hmm.
But they could have been part of this generation of kids that were taken from their families.
That's right.
And
the legacy of that is, certainly from what I've heard, still very much there in the community.
Yes. I mean, there's this thing about police, because they were the, during that period of time, they were, if there wasn't a Native Welfare Department office within that town or that region, the police were then seen as the protectors of Aboriginal people.
Mm.
But of course they weren't protectors, because they had to uphold the legislation of the 1905 Act. And part of that legislation, or part of those laws, were that Aboriginal people weren't allowed on the streets after 6 o'clock. And of course, if that happened, it was an automatic, I think it was a 3-month jail term, because they were on the street after six.
Mm.
There wasn't any freedom of movement within the towns and the communities and within the country centres of WA.
Mm.
And if they wanted to go to another town, they had to get permission to leave their district from the police. So things like that. I mean, and so it's over the years it's filtered down. It's created a lot of distrust from Aboriginal people toward the police. And there's obviously a lot of a lack of respect and all of those things that go with how Aboriginal were treated as a result of the 1905 Act.
Mm.
So there's a number of things. And education, I suppose, and because Aboriginal kids weren't, or children weren't allowed to go to government schools, they viewed education as not being important.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, we still have some of those effects, like, well, and it might have been okay 20 or 30 years ago, 40 years ago, because there was an abundance of jobs, either, farming and seasonal work, or, you could get a job in most government departments or on the the roads or doing jobs with the water supply or whatever in your town. Of course, that, those things aren't available now, and that's why I'm saying education is so important. But yes, there's certainly been a lot of legacies for Aboriginal people as a result of that legislation.
Well, that's great. Do you, well, that's, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about? Or?
Well, I think we've covered most things. I've done too much.
I think we both have. Okay, well, thank you very much, John, on behalf of the Heritage and Museum Services area of the City of Melbourne. And as I explained, we'll use this to build on our research and hopefully develop an aspect of it to display in our museum. So
excellent.
We'll stop it there. Thank you.